This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Well, hello, beautiful.
Holy caffeine!
It's the world's greatest super friends.
Ronnie and Aaron.
Faster than a streak of lightning.
A DC Comics podcast.
Absolute.
Tell me something, my friend. You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Yeah, sure, why not?
I'm Batman. I'm Batman.
Batman.
He's a hipster.
The Flash, world's fastest human.
I mean, I grew up with Wally West.
Think about the future.
If you're good at something, never do it for free.
Dude, you're a dumbass.
You are foolish.
Ooh.
DC Absolute.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. It's just like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, whatever. This is exciting.
Yeah.
We should have a DC school special. You know, the state of schools in Gotham versus Metropolis. What say you?
Oh my goodness, that would be fantastic.
Because I would say the schools of Metropolis would
probably be better than the schools in Gotham, because there's much less of a threat of craziness going on.
They'd be tougher though in Gotham.
Probably.
But I could see like the science, what was the old science unit in Metropolis having programs, like feeder programs in high schools that like specialize in like science and shit.
Oh yeah.
I could see that. But then you think of the different universities, and the universities in Gotham, like, I guess was Hudson University in that, or when he went to Hudson, he went to New York, when Dick went to Hudson? Or am I mixing that up with Johnny Storm? I don't remember. When Dick went to college.
Yeah, I'm trying to...
It wasn't in Gotham. I thought it was in New York. Maybe I'm wrong. I should know this.
I definitely think that he left Gotham, but I don't remember if he was on the East or West Coast.
Yeah, they should all just go to Ivy University. That seems very nice. Yeah. Ray Palmer will take care of you, you know. Very Leave It to Beaver. So anyway, you can start whenever you guys want. This is your show. I'm just here to soak it in.
Well, I guess as you can hear, we have a special guest with us this week.
Oh, we're just recording right now.
We're always recording.
Is this the Mike Myers method of recording?
No, I actually edit some things.
Glad I didn't say it. Okay. Yeah, because we got to take out some of those mentions of names and money and stuff.
that stuff will be gone. that'll be a post-credit scene where we'll get you in a lot of trouble.
Actually, you wouldn't even get me in trouble. The person would just say, like, yeah, no doubt. Like,
yeah, probably.
Oh, man. Anyway, hi, everyone.
If you don't recognize the voice, that is superstar podcaster Chris Campbell.
Oh, it's great to be on. This is on my bucket list of podcasts.
Oh, that's exciting.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully we don't crash and burn while trying to live up to your expectations.
It's a bucket list, so we could all die.
Let's face it, we're at the bottom of the bucket anyway, so there's no place to go but up.
We've already drowned multiple times.
We got Chris on for ratings.
Daryl's going to do an ad campaign with a crossover. I podcasted with your boy Martin. We did a little crossover episode that was the nerdiest podcast I've ever done in my life.
Was that when he was still pretending to do the Gotham podcast every week?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Did you hear that episode? You probably turned it off after 5 minutes. It was a focus on collecting high-end back issue Batman comics. So about four people listened.
I was one of four.
It was fun. It was fun to do.
Well, I guess a good place to start maybe is the wrap up of the super fun event, sort of, I guess. Whatever you call Justice League No Justice. Ronnie, you read the newest and the final issue, Ronnie?
Yep, I sure did.
Well, okay. Let's get a fresh perspective on this one. Chris, did this one live up to your expectations?
I'll say this. When I read the first issue, I was kind of, you know, it was fun, you know. And for a moment, for the briefest of moments, I was kind of optimistic. But at the end, it just turned into kind of not my thing. Did not enjoy it too much. It was mediocre, And this will get me hate mail. Every once in a while, when I read some of Snyder's things, especially metal, and I might be on the outside on this, the way he often writes, especially if it's kind of a complicated setup or story, or you know, there's lots of threads, he writes for me in a way that tends to force me to skip over entire chunks of dialogue because I get too bored. Does that ever happen to you guys? No, or you read it all?
Well, on a first read through, I try and read everything, but I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily him. There are a couple writers, I guess he might be included, where I will skip over a lot of the exposition.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Like, I'll read dialogue so that I can hear what's, you know, in my head, hear the conversation as it's happening. But if there's, you know, 15 boxes of narration going on in every page,
the square boxes,
I'll skip, you know, I'll kind of skim them and see if like any words pop out, but I'll mostly just kind of ignore it.
And I don't want to. I mean, I'm not in a rush. I'm here to enjoy it and escape. But some writers, I think they love the whole diary approach, or like, you know, the thought balloons, or like the omniscient narrator type thing. And so when that's in addition to the dialogue, and there's a lot of dialogue and there's not much action, it's almost like I almost revert back to like old school when I read Silver Age comics, right, where you don't really need to read the dialogue. You only need to read the dialogue because it'll say like, oh, and Robin showed up just in time and kicked the bad guy, and then you see a panel of Robin kicking the bad guy,
right,
and saying like, you know, eat my foot, you know. It's like I don't need to read the thing I'm seeing. And I mean, everyone knows that. They had exposition describing what you see in the panel, and so I would skip it. And I found myself doing that with certain books recently. And it might be me. It might not be the writing. But what do you guys think? I was a little underwhelmed. I don't know.
Well, I mean, Ryan and I started off by calling this Justice League No Interest.
Oh,
and
snap.
And as it went on, I got slightly more interested, but overall, I mean, I kind of tuned out of metal about halfway through.
Oh, I tuned the hell out of metal halfway through, and I went back and read it, and it was still boring.
I haven't gone back and read it.
It's hard.
Yeah, I mean, I think I stopped reading it after they did all the solo Batman issues. Like the one who laughed and whatever else. Once those came out, I was like, you know what? I just don't even care about the main story anymore. So I'm going to, you know.
One or two of those ones were actually fairly good. I really liked
the Green Lantern one.
Future Zen vibe, kind of, almost.
Yeah, but with no Justice. I mean, as I started reading the final issue, I had it in my head that it was going to be one of those you wouldn't even get a resolution in this. And it would kind of be like, now we have to do this. And that would lead into the new Justice League books. And if that was the case, that was going to probably just really turn me off from the Justice League stuff. Because why wouldn't you just put it all in the same series at that point? Yeah. But luckily there was, you know, a resolution for this.
Well, what do you think, Ronnie?
It's kind of like Snyder's in the ballpark. And I know I'm going to get hate tweets for this, but... Oh, well. Snyder's in the ballpark now, like, with Geoff Johns is for me. Like, I'm excited when it's announced, and then when I get to it, then it becomes, like, mediocre.
Well, to be fair, what else has Geoff Johns actually written recently?
Well,
Ronnie means in general. He's not a huge Geoff Johns fan.
I still adore Geoff Johns, and when he can do no wrong. He's not going to do no wrong, but if they let him just take over some random title in DC, I would read it and I would probably enjoy it. Well, you know, Doomsday, I'm not a big fan of the before Watchmen. I didn't read any of it. I don't want to. The Doomsday Clock stuff I'm reading, but my heart's not in it.
Yeah. That was like the comparison, just because for me, because Geoff Johns, when he was announced to do Doomsday Clock, it was like, it was awesome. And then the first two issues came out on time, and they were good to awesome. And then we hit the delay.
So good.
Yeah, we hit the delay, and then it's just like,
you like the,
now
you
I don't want to care.
You like the first two? You like the first two issues?
I love them.
Okay.
The first issue, I thought the way that it went, it felt like as the opening credits of a movie are happening, and it's like, you know, all this stuff is going on around the world and this and whatever. It felt like you're sitting down, you're about to watch like this 2.5 hour like crazy action epic, and I was all in.
And then the projector breaks down.
Then the second issue had a lot of the stuff with the marionette, right?
Yep.
With them. I was like, oh heck yes, this is fantastic.
Oh, you like that stuff.
Oh yeah. Then issue three, I started losing interest when I stopped caring at all about Rorschach.
Yeah, it's tough.
And then the projector broke.
And we had to wait.
And then the projector broke.
Yeah.
Well, I'm always some people. I think a lot of people fall into one or two camps. I love Watch. You know, Daryl doesn't like it, and that's fine. I think The Watchmen is a genius. I've read it many times. I love it. I'm a big Alan Moore fan. Not everything he writes is good, but I truly think he's a fantastic writer. Some of the weird Cthulhu stuff, not my cup of tea, but the main stuff he's done, I've read it all, and I love 90% of it. I don't like V for Vendetta for some reason. I really do not like that book, and I don't like Promethea, but everything else I really like. But I liked Watchmen because of the story he told. I didn't care about the characters going into it, and I feel like some people now, after that, they loved the characters, but I guess in my mind, I only love them when he's writing them. And I think there's other characters like that. There's like some people who only like Deadpool when so and so writes them, you know. But if someone else writes them, it's not the same. So I don't care about Rorschach if he's being written by someone else. There's just some spark missing for me,
right?
You know, and so I don't care. And that's like Mike Myers. Mike was like going, "Why don't you watch Before Watchmen's great?" I'm like, it might be, but I just don't care because Alan Moore's not along for it. I want his. I'm not saying it's bad. I got too much to read and I just don't care.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense. So that's the thing with the Doomsday Clock. Like, so far there's no one in there I care about, and people think I'm crazy, but I don't know. Just not interested.
No. And, on the episode.
So
of,
negative. We're so negative. I love it.
Hey, that's what we do.
I got positive stuff later. Don't worry.
Oh, I have some pretty positive stuff as well. I am positive that, I don't know if I'm going to read issue 5 of Doomsday Clock.
Oh.
I have it, and I haven't read it yet. And a bunch of people said that it improves on what was happening, so hopefully I'll see that. But I just couldn't bring myself to read it yet.
I remember listening to an older episode of one of Martin's podcasts, and he was bent out of shape, rightfully so, because... he goes, this is stupid. They've got metal going on at the same time as Doomsday Clock, and they're both supposed to be reshaping the universe as we know it. And how can you have two books, not diametrically opposed? You can't have two cooks in the kitchen at the same time. It's confusing. And they were happening at the same time, but now I laugh because metal is gone, done. People are moved on. I don't think anyone cares about metal anymore at all. And we got another year plus before Doomsday Clock ran. I mean, it could be like, forget about happening at the same time. It could be like two summers apart. That, the ending.
That's the thing. I mean, I think they're still they still have hope that Doomsday Clock will be done this year, but I was on Comic Talk today with Martin, and we were talking about it, and I'm like, no, because they switched the schedule to every other month, and there's 7 more issues, so that's 14 months out, and you know there's going to be some other delay somewhere. So I'm like, maybe December of 2019 we'll see the last issue, but I don't know. And it's the same thing. Like, why would you do Metal and Doomsday Clock at the same time? I mean, Metal also was delayed, but you know, like it's weird how, I mean, they've given Snyder like this whole chunk of the universe to just take over. You know, he had Metal, which led into this new Justice League thing. It also led into all the New Age of Heroes books.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the Justice League stuff is going to continue with this. And now you have, you know, the Doomsday Clock series, which is supposed to be like the whole mystery of Rebirth, I guess.
Okay.
And every time it seemed like you were leading towards something that might be, you know, why was the pin in the Batcave, you know, the Flash and Batman stuff, you know, like this whole thing, it doesn't give you anything. And I mean, I know there's 7 more issues and I haven't read this one, so I still have 8 issues, I guess, to read. But it's like, what, like you said, there's too many cooks in the kitchen. You can't keep splintering off everything into like chunks of different stuff, you know, and now everything that was kind of fitting together, you've taken Superman out of that whole bit and you've done a whole bunch of other stuff. And it's like, I don't even know. I don't know what's going on anymore.
The ending to Metal doesn't seem to really change anything of real meaning. Right. I mean, I know the source wall has a hole in it now, but none of it feels significant from a status quo shifting change. The most significant thing, and this maybe segues into one of the books we should talk about, is Superman. And all of a sudden now, you know, what's going on with Clark and John and Lois, and, you know, what's going to happen there? I think that's going to be the biggest status quo. And that just goes to show you don't need some crazy, silly, big story to necessarily change things. It can be something personal that is the biggest status quo change of all, right?
Right.
You know, if Superman decides he needs to do something, and then separates from Lois and Jonathan or whoever knows what, I don't know what's been announced coming up and stuff, but that stuff seems bigger. And I'm bummed out that Bendis is taking over this book at this time.
Yep,
I'm sure you guys have talked about it, but God, what a crappy time to take the existing teams off of Superman books when this is the best they've been in.
Yeah,
this is the best Superman books have been since Geoff Johns did that cool Legion of Superheroes storyline where he went and saw Earthman and he got shot because the sun was red instead of yellow. That was dope. That was, I think, the last time it was good. And that was for a short period of time, because then they had the whole world of New Krypton. I think Rucka did that when he was like up on the moon. That mm-hmm. was kind of cool, but it kind of fell a little flat at the end. And then they had that awful War of the Supermen. But it's legitimately amazing. And no matter what those guys say, you know, they're salty. That like, oh, Bendis is coming. And now, you know, Juergens, who deserves all the credit in the world, and Tomasi for making this character in this corner of the universe awesome, they just kind of get kind of like, okay, go away, thank you. I mean, I was tempted just to almost boycott it, just say like, please treat the fans better, like, you know, I mean, that's not fair. I mean, they're trying to give the fans something cool, and I understand that, but man, it could have been handled a little better. Why did you have to knock both of those guys off the book?
I don't understand why you couldn't leave those two teams in place on Superman in Action and give Bendis the Man of Steel and let him say, this is sort of, you know, this is going to be out of continuity. It's going to be, you know, this is his take on the character. Here you go. I don't get why that couldn't have happened instead of
sales. Because the sales would suck, I think. I think the sales would not be. I think they actually had some sales, I hear. If you make it not in continuity, I think they maybe feared that the optics would look bad, like the sales numbers would be low, because people, you know, I mean, not everything can be Batman White Knight, you know, and sell like gangbusters, even though it's kind of
right. But if they're betting on the fact that bringing in Bendis is going to make them, you know, a bank, then why wouldn't you try it? Based on the fact that you're bringing in. I mean, I would guess he was the big guy from Marvel. I mean, at least one of their top two.
Jason Aaron, I think, is number one, but he's top. He's definitely in the top.
You know, but
I equate him with like an aging pitcher. Like, you know, his track record is good, but like if you're looking at current performance, you know, and what sells, I don't think those books he was writing, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, whatever the hell he was writing towards the end, I don't think those are selling crazy. You know, they certainly weren't. Him being involved didn't seem to be moving the needle. And maybe he just needed a change of scenery.
But do you think that him going from Marvel to DC, all of the DC people who don't read Marvel stuff, you know, like that are.
New audience.
Right. It's, here's.
Nobody wants to see what's going around.
Here's this huge name that has been writing comics for, you know, forever. let's see what he does. And then there's plenty of Marvel people that, you know, a lot of people that I know that read comics don't necessarily read them for titles. They read them for creators. You know, if they like a writer, if they don't like a book, you know, for a while, I've never read Moon Knight in my life. And I was picking it up because Jeff Lemire wrote it.
Really?
You know, I was like a whole bunch of Marvel stuff that I was never really into. I'm like, oh, you know what?
That's smart.
I like, this guy. I like this guy, his writing. I may as well check it out. I would assume that Marvel fans that don't necessarily read Superman would have given it a shot if they were fans of Bendis. So, mm-hmm. I mean, even if it's not out of continuity like a White Knight, I mean, if it was, you know, like a just on a different time, say, you can tell it's whatever happened in this universe has happened, but that's, you know, 6 years ahead of now, you know, so you can kind of play around with things like his relationship with mm-hmm. Lois and, you know, where Jonathan is and everything else, you know, that mm-hmm. I think I would have been more okay with that, you know, just initially than, mm-hmm. you know, hey, we know you guys really like Superman. And now everything's gone.
Right. It's risky, I think, because you have a whole new audience. You might get this big, you could theoretically get this big bump. People saying, oh, Bendis, I've heard a lot about him. He's coming over to DC. I'm definitely going to give it a shot. You might see a nice spike in orders. But because they're not familiar with him, he could swing and miss in their eyes. You know, like, oh, okay, so right. There's hype. Right. And so there's going to be this thought of, does he live up to it? So I think the expectations among these new readers that he has the potential to get is going to be high. And so if he doesn't deliver, it could be like a swing and a miss, you know, like if that makes sense. This is his chance to make a first impression with a large group of DC readers.
Right.
And it's very important. And I thought the first issue was good.
Well, the two short stories that he had written before this, I did not like either one.
I did not like either one either. Either one so, either, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. So so I went into the Man of Steel number one very, very cautiously.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say 85% of the book I absolutely loved.
Yep. Sounds about right.
And that would be the Superman parts, right?
Yeah. Yep, the Superman anything parts. Anything with generic villain, I don't care for.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Yeah.
Speak and spell, that's what I'm going to call him. It sounds like someone ties a bunch of letters into
To be honest, I don't even remember what his name was.
Razzle Allegory, I don't know. It's horrible.
I don't remember, I don't care.
I think it ends in but L.
He seems like the most generic everything. Oh, I'm going to go to this planet where it's a rough planet and I'm going to fight things to make sure I'm strong when I fight Superman because they want me to fight Superman. Oh, they don't want me to fight Superman. Well, I'm going to have to go and fight him anyway or destroy Krypton or whatever. And I'm just like, who cares?
Basically, his view was that Kryptonians are like evil, like, you know, evil English
Their
empire
empire's expanding too
into,
fast
into mm-hmm. India
and
or
destroying
whatever.
Other things. Yeah,
we need to stop them now.
Correct.
And all the guardians and the other powers that be said they haven't really done anything wrong yet, so you can't just kind of preemptively do that.
Right.
So this is in the past, right? That stuff's all in the past, obviously.
That
right?
stuff is
yes,
yeah.
Before Krypton blew up, yeah.
So but I think it's way before Krypton blew up.
It would kind of have to be, right? Otherwise, there would be no time for his prophecies to come true, right? Like,
right.
Correct.
If that was right before Krypton blew up, it's like, where do you go from there?
Yeah. I mean, too little, too late now.
It's like, right. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what makes him a villain. Or maybe, frankly, at this point, it might be more interesting if he swerves us and he's actually not a villain. He becomes an ally against something else. Like, you know, two guys that hate each other at first, like Lethal Weapon, and then become, like, buddies against some other threat. I don't know. Maybe. Because I don't see his angle, right? I mean, it's like he thinks that Krypton's bad. And then, what? You know, he sees Superman, who's a good guy, unless he's crazy. And, like, what, Zod's around. I mean, how does he come at, I don't know. We'll wait and see, right? I don't see how he could become an antagonist to Superman, and on what basis? So correct. I'm waiting. But the old school Superman stuff was awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
I this Superman to me, I mean, I grew up in the 80s, so Christopher Reeve Superman. I've seen all those movies like a trillion times, and this Superman feels like Christopher Reeve to me.
Absolutely.
That even you know when yeah. he goes into the fire and the person like swears, he's like, hey, language, you know, just like every yeah. little bit of it, I was like, this is great. It's just a shame that I don't know what exactly is going on with Lois and Jonathan. I mean, you saw some yeah. flashback stuff, and I mean, it looks like they're on the outs.
You'll yeah, I don't want to say anything about that. It's just yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
it's
it feels very Christopher Reeve's prior Superman 3.
Hey man, don't hey hey, super are you did you do that on purpose?
Yeah,
you poked me. Superman 3 is one of my favorite movies.
I know.
Dude, when Richard Pryor breaks out the suitcase of booze and they got the cowboy hat, I was, how old was I when that movie came out? Like 1985 or something? 86?
It was 83.
So I was like 6 years old. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. He's got this cool, because like, I remember I had this, when I was a little boy, my mom worked nights at a bank and my dad worked for Boeing during the day. And so my mom, when she would have to, it was tough on our schedules and stuff. So when I was a little kid, they had this neighborhood girl who was maybe, I don't know, like 14 or so. I was like 3, you know. She would come over and like watch, and so like my mom could get some sleep or something, right? Because she had to go to work, right? So,
right.
So she would come over at dinner time and like watch me for 3 hours while my mom got 3 hours of sleep during the day. But she would bring one of those like old attaché hard case like briefcases, and she would crack it open every time she came and open it up, and there'd be a smattering of Star Wars action figures, and I would just like play with them for hours, you know. And I looked forward to that every time she came, and sometimes there'd be her like one of her little younger brothers like would put some in there, and there'd be like a new one. I remember when the little walking garbage can, I first saw it in the box. I was like, what's a walking garbage can? But anyway, so when I saw Superman 3, I just had the same joy of watching him open up that big suit. I didn't even understand what alcohol was, right? I didn't know.
Right.
But he just opened up this big case. I thought, oh, it's a fun suitcase of fun. I love it. I just love that movie. And then like, oh my God, when he's flicking the peanuts at the bar, oh my God, come on. How do you not love? When he gets all mad, oh my God. When he has second, anyway, he has the Captain Kirk moment where he's putting on his boots afterwards, you know, and all you see.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love that movie. So, but imagine how much it would have blown your mind if not only did Bendis write it like he wrote it, but they would have had Gary Frank draw it, because he always draws him to look just like Christopher Reeve. I think blown my. I think my head would have exploded.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
Transcendental moment. Anyway. So you don't like the. You're like the vague, weird future antagonist, assumed future antagonist. I mean, I assume he's got to be. That was the only weak spot.
Yeah.
Because Superman's only as good as his, you know, his villains, frankly. I mean, I don't... If you're going to jettison the cool interpersonal stuff that Tomasi and Jurgens have built up with Lois and Jonathan, if you're going to jettison that, then... You better come strong with some villains that, you know,
yeah,
bring the right stuff out. I mean, and I don't know if he's, I don't know. Luther's so weird right now. Luther seems to be in this weird status of like good, bad guy, you know, and I have a feeling that Bendis doesn't like that. I have a feeling that he's in charge of all the Superman books. And I have a feeling that you won't see Luther for a year. That's my gut. And when we see him next and Bendis introduces him into his series, I think it's going to be a Luther unlike what we've witnessed in the last year. Do you guys agree, or do you think that's wrong?
Well, looking at the end of...
No Interest? Justice League No Interest? I mean, No Justice?
Yeah, I think that's... Because I think that Luther being a good guy is off the table now.
I think so too.
And I'm ridiculous. Yeah, I'm glad because the Luther good guy has been snoozeworthy boring for me.
It should be people in the detective run, but do you want to see him as a good guy written by just random other people now? Or,
right. Yeah.
Or what? I don't know.
Yeah, because Tinian set the bar with Clayface as a good guy, I think.
Just right place, right time, right approach, and you just, you know, I don't know. Whenever someone just picks up a character like that, I feel like it's embarrassing, sloppy seconds. It's like, oh, that was cool what James did. Let me just pick him up and use him, you know, for a storyline. And it's cheap, I think, and because it's mm-hmm. not really paying respect to the work that was done to establish him. Now you're just kind of reaping the benefits of, like, cool, Clayface is in this arc. It's like, yeah, it's just because it's because of that reaction. It just wants readers to say cool and pick it up. But
right. What do you think, Aaron? Has Lex Luthor been boring?
Well, it was weird. My call dropped for like 2 minutes.
I thought so. Okay. You're back.
I don't know. I think I might have said it last week where I like Luthor, but too much Luthor kind of ruins him for me. And like him kind of as the hero, sometimes I liked it, and other times I'm just like, you know what, this isn't the dynamic I really enjoy between the two of them. So it kind of, I mean, I wouldn't say it really ruined it because there were parts of good Luthor that I enjoyed. But I mean, overall, I wouldn't mind him kind of going away for a bit and coming back. I mean, even if he comes back the kind almost the same way that he is now, just some time off, I guess.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's the same kind of thing with the Joker. If you have the Joker all the time, mm-hmm. you kind of have to
step back for a while,
and you're just like, all right, let's kind of put him away for a year or so and see what happens.
Kind of like Sinestro too.
I think Sinestro is different. I think, and they've put in so much work in to have him be, and I'll tell you why. Sinestro to me strikes me as a antagonist. That has the what all cool, truly cool antagonists have is they think they're doing the right thing, right? And because he thinks most of the time that he's doing what's right for the universe or whatever, it makes him have more sustaining power as a character because he's not a crazy, you know, crazy guy,
power hungry guy,
but like the Joker. But and that's what
no, but I isn't thought, that the same with Luthor though? That he thinks he is doing the right thing for everybody.
But it just hasn't been executed as well, I think.
Oh, right.
Well, that's just my opinion. I just think it hasn't been executed as well. You're right. I think I love Luther when he was in, what was that, A Man for All Seasons? Was that Loeb?
Yeah, that was Jeff Loeb.
Like, yeah.
That was, I think, one of the best takes on Luther being, you know, not Sinestro-esque, but like doing something awful because he thought it was the right thing. Mm-hmm. Now, and that was short and sweet and perfect. Now it's kind of like he's not doing bad things necessarily to be the good guy. He's almost imitating Superman, you know.
He's just like going through the motions.
Same as Sinestro,
right?
Through the motions, he's like emulating or showing like a human can do it, you know.
You know what? We already have that because we have a Batman. So you don't need Lex Luthor to say, "Look, there's a wealthy guy in a suit that can do this superhero stuff."
Yeah, the coolest hero in all of comics is normal. So,
yeah,
people are gonna yell at me. They're gonna say, "How dare you!" But there's this thing I've always noted, and there's exceptions to it, but it's like the frequency spectrum concept where certain characters, because of the way they've been written, they're like they flame out fast. They burn bright and flame out fast, like the Joker. You know, you can't. You know, he's on the spectrum of like use him for one storyline and he's got to be gone for a while because it's like he's a cataclysmic event and you need to just like recover, let the readers recover. And if it isn't cataclysmic, then you're using him wrong. But then there's other characters where they could literally show up every other arc and the way they're used, it's okay. Like the Penguin, right? The Penguin can show up every other arc and that's fine. The Joker cannot show up every other arc. So that's how I. So there's characters like in Superman, you know, where you can't have Brainiac show up every other arc, you know?
Right. Well, now you can't have him show up at all.
Real Docs, man. I love Real Docs. You guys read Rebels, right? Did you guys read Rebels? The story Rebels from about 10 years ago? The R.
I read it a while ago. Yeah.
God, yes. So good. Anyway. If people haven't read that, it's not really traded, which is really unfortunate, but it might be on Comixology or whatever. But that was a fantastic story. Oh my god!
That was one of the stories when I wasn't really reading comics that my friend would always kind of keep me abreast of things, and he would be like, "Here, read this."
DC does a great job in having those wonky little series that should not succeed. But they do. I'm talking like Tom's Omega Men or the Red Lanterns book, which turned out to be amazing towards the end, or Rebels or Secret Six, or, you know, they have a lot. I feel envious of people who just heard that list and said, man, I haven't read any of those. Those are actually good. I'm like, oh, yeah. Red Hood and the Outlaws, I think. I don't know. Daryl and I joke about this. Scott Lobdell must be paying somebody to write it. It's phenomenal.
Ryan and I say that all the time. If you look at what he was doing in the New 52 mm-hmm. with Red Hood and the Outlaws, and then you look at what he's doing now with Rebirth, I don't know what happened. I don't know, you know, if in New 52 they're like, you have to write this story, this is what we want, and now he's allowed to just do whatever. But
doing a great job.
Oh my goodness, it's fantastic.
And the artist is fantastic. I've never really heard of that guy.
Terrific. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all caught up on that. I remember that was very heartbreaking when the first, I think it was in the New 52, when Lex had the Bizarro clone that died, you know, and he actually showed some compassion to it, like almost like a son. That was very heartbreaking. And now this isn't the same one, of course. This is a different clone. But, you know, Artemis just kind of had it out with Lex in the most recent issue about Bizarro and the issues he's having and everything. And, man, it's good. I'm very impressed. Like, I'm bummed out, frankly, that they don't have the hardcover collections of that. I know they tried to focus on just a few of them.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of bummed they don't have the hardcovers for that series. I would buy it.
Oh, absolutely. There are a few books that I would get hardcovers of, and it seems like they're ones that they're not really putting out the hardcovers for.
Which other ones?
Is there any hardcover collection of Deathstroke?
No, that's because I agree 100%.
I've seen nothing, and like I don't really like the trades, but I have you know bookshelves of hardcovers, and
hardcovers are just better to have. Deathstroke.
Right, like you were saying before. About you don't really care for a character unless a certain person's writing it. Mm-hmm. That if Priest isn't writing Deathstroke, I've never cared about Deathstroke the way I do now. And and if he gets taken off,
What about his 80s series? You're telling me you didn't like that series? That was amazing.
Is it as good as this one? I don't think so.
Close. Oh, whoa. Wolfman stuff? Priest is fantastic. I think. I always tell Daryl he needs to get Christopher Priest. We will travel to his house to interview him. I don't care.
You know what? He showed up last year at Comic-Con in New York, just randomly showed up and sat down at the Valiant booth and did a signing because I guess of Quantum and Woody. And I happened to be at the table while he showed up. And I said to my friend, I'm like 90% sure that's Christopher Priest. And he goes, I don't know who that is. And I was like,
oh, just go away.
I hate you. First of all, and second of all, I'm going to go talk to him.
Trivia question for you.
Okay.
Trivia. What name did he use when he wrote Batman? Do you remember?
No, I don't even remember.
Jim Owsley. It was right around when Starlin was writing it, writing Death of the Family. I think it was a couple issues before he wrote a couple of issues. Jim Owsley. That's Priest.
Huh. Yeah, interesting.
I bet you most people listening go, oh, wait, let me go dig those issues up. Hold on.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was Christopher Priest.
But... Yeah, I mean, I guess
it's great
there because of, you know, the Quantum and Woody stuff. But I was like, I need to talk to you about Deathstroke.
And he's like, I need to talk to you about Deathstroke.
Oh, my goodness.
What do you say? He said he don't care?
What?
Oh, by the way, people aren't so happy about this whole implying that Damien is Deathstroke's son. People are not so happy about that.
See, I mean, I know it's you know it's not going to turn out to be true.
No, no. Well, I say people,
but
I mean...
I think it's hysterical.
Oh, it's hysterical. I love it. It's fun, you know? I love all the parallels they're drawing. I love Wintergreen and Pennyworth and stuff.
Yep.
But apparently he didn't ask for any permission before just doing the storyline. He just did it and it just went right through editorial. And people were like, what the hell's going on? But I think it's brilliant. Yeah, that needs a hardcover series. But you're right, because I think Tony Daniel, didn't he do the new 52 Deathstroke series?
Yeah.
Which was, I mean, to put it kindly, was awful. And they put out an omnibus of it. Like, what?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, honestly, I guess if you look at sales numbers, maybe, you know, maybe that's how they drive. I mean, obviously, it's how they figure out what they're going to do with, you know, with collecting stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean... Come on, look at social media and see what people are actually talking about and give us those books. Because, I mean, I'm sure they can track that stuff now.
Yeah, they can.
Obviously, that's what happened with Omega Men. When they're like, yeah, we're going to end this one. People are like, oh, no, you're going to give us this entire story. And they're like, oh, okay, we decided we're going to give you the entire story.
I always tell Tom that's the favorite thing he's ever done of mine. And I don't think it'll ever... I don't know if it'll ever be unseated. I don't know, man. I just dug it. It just felt like
love
awesome sci-fi. I absolutely loved it.
And I don't remember. I think it was a couple years ago at Comic-Con, before he hit big and he'd actually like sit at a table in Artist Alley and talk to people. Mm-hmm. I think it was right after they decided they were going to bring it back one year. And I was like over by his table just talking for a bit. And I was like, you know what? I am glad that they're bringing this back because that book is like freaking fantastic. And he asked if his mother sent me over to cheer him up.
Oh man. Yeah.
I think at the time he was doing maybe Grayson also.
Maybe. Yeah. I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I was talking to him about that stuff and he's like, it sounds like my mom sent you over to cheer me up. It's like, no, just, you know, I've never met your mother and those books are fantastic. So
yeah, his mother's no longer with us either, so that's...
Oh, okay. Yeah. Omega Men is...
It's a bummer. Omega Men is really good. The Grayson thing, I remember when he called me and told me that he got that, he was very excited, obviously. But at the time, he was an unknown, and Tim was more of a known writer. And so, you know, he was telling me what the plan was, like they're going to alternate writing it and stuff like that, and... he wrote the Future's End issue, which I actually really, really enjoy. And I remember he was so nervous when it came out because he was worried if people wouldn't get the coded references in the book, right? Because like if you read the book, there it's like if you look at the first letter of each word, it's a code. And that's how he and Huntress are communicating. And that's like at the very end when he says something that says like rooftop, like... So like she's talking to him in code and it makes it much more interesting, right?
Yeah.
And there's people always ask like, you know, hey, who's Dick meant to be with? And if you look in the book, not look in the book, but if you look in an interview question, it spells out Barbara. If you look at his answer in one of the Newsarama articles or something, they're interviewing about it. And he answers the question
in the code that he used
in the code. And it spells Barbara. I thought that was clever of him.
Yeah.
But I really like that. But my favorite issue of Grayson by far, in a way. Did you guys read that series?
Oh, absolutely. Is it the one where he's walking through the desert?
Yeah, 5.
Yep.
Issue 5. I told him when he's... it's fantastic. It's like... I love it.
That is one of my favorite single issues probably from the past 10 years.
Yeah, it's up there. It's really up there. And I'll try to send them. I might have them. I might have them in my text, but I have to send you. Wait, maybe at least on Bleeding Cool too or something. He initially had it where there was in the clouds. There were scenes like he was delirious. There were scenes from Robin Dies at Dawn issue of Batman 156.
Huh.
There were scenes up in the sky. From the actual issue in the old school art, and the very last minute they nixed it because they didn't want people to like be focused on the past. They wanted to be focused on the rebirth, future, whatever, or not rebirth, but I mean,
right.
you know, New 52 and all that stuff. But it looked really cool, and it made it kind of neater, too, because it was really cool paralleled with that. So I don't know if you've ever read that story, but it's a good story. Cover.
Were they taking, like, literally taking the art and just putting it in there, or were they redrawing it?
Nope, they were not redrawing it. It was actually really cool looking. Huh. It was very meta. I liked it a lot. I'll see if I can find it. But anyway, so I read it both ways. And I actually think removing it doesn't hurt the story. Obviously, it's amazing.
Right.
But, yeah. Are you excited? Did you guys talk about how the detective ended? I thought it ended fairly well. Okay. I mean, I don't know how you guys were on Tinian's detective run and how it ended. Well,
we talked about it last week. That the only complaint that I had was the 1990s sitcom ending, where it's him swinging off to go fight crime. But besides that, I thought it was pretty solid. I enjoyed most of the entire run on that book. I'm not a huge fan of Barbara, so there were a few issues where it was like very not Barbara, Batwoman. I mean,
oh god,
yeah.
Well, I didn't mean Barbara. Spoken.
Yeah, Kate Kane.
She's boring.
Yeah, Kate, not Barbara.
She's boring. I think
there were some of it I didn't mind too much, but there were a couple issues where it was just like a little too much. That I sort of zoned out, but I would say overall, I mean, I would give the whole run probably like an 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10. Okay.
It had to do something to get me interested in the Batwoman character, period. It levels up just for that, because after that, I don't really care much for her, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it had its ups and downs. I don't know. It had ups and downs, and I still don't really care about Batwoman. And I think they made the right decision, and it appears they're shelving Luke Fox. He did not take off. Seems to be shelving Azrael, which is smart because, God, he's the epitome of a throwaway supporting character. And how the hell he got 100 issues of a solo series, I will never understand.
I don't know.
You know why? Because Danny O'Neill was the group editor and he was writing it. That's right.
There's a lot of the supporting Bat characters at this point that I don't really care if they stick around.
There's so many redundancies.
Yeah. I mean, that's not the right problem. Word, but it really is. There are so many people that are pretty much interchangeable at this point that.
Or they haven't, and they're not, it's like, it's like trees crowding out other smaller trees. They need time to be developed, and you can't give time to everybody. And so like, look at Duke. Duke just isn't. Tom's not using him, rightfully so, because I think he's kind of a boring character. He's not being used much, and therefore he's atrophying. You know, as a character, he's not staying on top of people's minds. He's not being. You know, the Signal was okay. The Batman Signal miniseries was fine. I liked it. You know, it was good. But. They've lost any momentum they've had.
Yeah, I did not really care for that one.
You didn't like it, really? Okay.
No, I read the first issue. I read the first issue, and then Ronnie offered to fall on the sword and read 2 and 3, so I didn't have to.
Oh, I remember you not liking it. That's right. Well, you know what? I stuck with it, and it was a 7 out of 10 miniseries. I thought, and that's even with me not really liking the character, but
that's my problem. Since the We Are Robin book, they have done nothing with him that I have cared about at all.
That's fair. You're not alone.
You know, when he first, I guess, came on the scene, and I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then all of the We Are Robin thing, you know, I thought it was fantastic. I loved the whole concept of that book, you know, and everything. And then we're going to bring Duke in. He's going to be, you know, the new member of the Bat family. And I'm like, oh, interesting. Let's see, you know, let's see what happens. And I was like, oh, all right. And then I'm just like, wow, I do not care. I guess
there's no room for him because Damian is amazingly popular. I mean, he's just around. He's going to be around. That's that. He's stuck. And he can't just be shuffled off because I don't think he's going anywhere. And I
think part of the problem could be going back to what we talked about earlier, how like Snyder just doesn't always click. And he seems to be the only one that's using Duke in anything.
And he won't be using him at all now because he doesn't have the, he doesn't have the platform,
right?
You know, that makes sense to use him.
You know, but there are some people.
That's fine.
You know, there are some writers, I guess, that could take a character like him, and if they're just, you know, kind of like a throwaway thing, like how Red Hood is now. If editorial just picks a guy and they're like, hey, just do whatever with this guy. We just want to do, you know, an 8-issue series and that's it. And just tell your story. And I think that there are a lot of people out there that could do some amazing things with Duke or with, you know, with Batwing or with like any number of those other characters that when they're thrown into a book, you know, like Detective, where there's, you know, at this point, a dozen characters. I mean, why even have him there? You may as well. There's plenty of reasons why, you know, any number of other people could do the exact same stuff in the story that you can cut the cast down by almost half and have it tell a better story.
Yeah, it's like sometimes I view it as like characters winning the lottery, meaning there's lots of characters that are kind of on the sidelines waiting for their shot. And then editorial says, okay, we're going to pick this talented writer and give him a mini or a maxi series and let him focus on this character, and they've got a pitch for that character, like the Vision, you know? It's like the Vision lucked out because the Vision got an Eisner winning series written by someone who had a good idea or a novel, well-executed idea for him.
Right.
And it worked out well. But for every Vision, there's 10 other characters who wish, man, I wish I would have gotten that shot. You know, I wish, you know, Luke Fox, I wish someone would have came along with a miniseries of that caliber and forethought, you know, and picked me, you know. But they just fall by the, like Harper Row, she's not going to be used. Like
no, and I really liked a lot of the stuff they were doing with her when they started doing the Future's End, like those 5 years ahead books.
So the Bluebird.
Oh my God, I love that issue.
You did?
She comes in. Right. She's hanging upside down from the ceiling with her gun, like, come on, it was great.
Yeah, she's in my, it's, you're gonna laugh at this, but that character, the vibe I get from that character, she would fit in better in Batman Beyond than in Batman. Something about her, I don't know. I don't know if it's the tech savvy thing or just she's such more of a modern character, but you know, she also hasn't been developed that much. I mean, she's mentioned by name now more than she actually shows up on panel, you know?
Yeah, and
she gets name dropped. She doesn't show up in books anymore. Like, right. Harper said this would be a good idea. I'm like, oh, wow.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I like her character. And the same thing with Spoiler. I think if you were to have given me, like, a Spoiler and Red Robin book, I mean, I think that would be fantastic. Especially, like, where the two of them are now.
Yeah, if Brian K. Vaughan agreed to do a road trip book with Tim Drake and Stephanie Brown, it would be amazing. But they're not going to do it.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, and going back to the thing about, you know, some characters, I mean, look at, you have Venditti is about to start Hawkman. I think that comes out in a couple weeks, the first issue.
Can't wait.
I mean, look at the highs and lows of Hawkman over the years. It's either it's amazing or it's terrible. There's like never really a middle ground.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, like you were saying with the Vision and stuff like that, you have a writer who gets it, who probably has a fantastic idea for this. So, I mean, I, for one, am absolutely looking forward to seeing, you know, what Hawkman's going to do.
I'm very, very excited because I think Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Venditti's good at writing those 50-issue arcs of characters, right?
I sent that to Ronnie last week. I'm like, why does he always stop at 50?
Hey, 50 is good. I mean, you know, it's like, about it. He's building up a resume of like, hey, when you give me a book, you got to give me 50 issues of the book because look at my track record. I do great 50-issue chunks of story. It's good for his career.
I know, but I mean, I would love for him to stick on stuff longer. And I mean, I guess with Exo, he's still
50. I mean, that's
Exo still had all the Zero issues and the special stuff and the Armor Hunter stuff. So I mean, he really wrote. I think it was
55 or 60, maybe.
No, I think it was closer to 70 issues when it's all.
No way, really?
Yeah, with all the crossover stuff that he was doing.
Fair enough. Yeah,
because he wrote Armor Hunters. There were like a whole bunch of Zeros. He wrote. There's something else he did too. I think. Like the Book of Death one shots and all, you know, all the other stuff like that, all the tie-in stuff.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, at this point, the two writers with the longest tenure on a book right now, I believe, are Tom and Josh from The Flash, right?
They've yeah.
written 50, you know, ish, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean they've been on the whole way.
Yeah, which I mean that's 50 issues, and that's a lot.
And Flash, he was writing it even before Rebirth, wasn't he?
He was.
I thought he was writing towards the end of New 52 also.
He might have been. I thought Venditti finished that up.
No, he did it, and then I think the two of them kind of were together, and then Venditti dropped off the last little bit.
Maybe, yeah. I told Tom I want to see return of Calendar Man that was teased in the very first Rebirth issue before the actual first issue. Remember? That was crazy, yeah. Man. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, you know what? I got to go back and read that again. That Rebirth Zero or whatever. That book.
Well, it was written by Scott. I mean,
It was written by Jeff Johns.
What are you talking about? No. Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about Rebirth Number One. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about Batman Rebirth One before.
Oh
Batman.
No.
Yeah, you know, I think that was a really fun issue. I love that.
I mean, now that it's been a couple years in. I gotta go back and read it and see what they've touched on, I guess.
Are you excited to see Grant Morrison write Green Lantern?
I don't know.
I am. Hey.
In the last episode, Ronnie and I talked about this a little bit, and I'm so hot or cold on Grant Morrison.
Me too.
That it within like two issues, I'll know if I'm gonna stick with it or not, and the last whole lot of stuff he's done, I've just kind of left it. I don't know why.
Do you like Batman? But, do you like Batman R.I.P.?
Yo, that was good, and
I destroyed it. We don't like it at all.
Oh no,
we did a book club on it. I've read it a couple of times, and right. I read it again, and we broke it down. Just not, just big picture. We just broke it down, and we just had a therapy Thursday session, and talked along. Tom about our thoughts about we got in deep, we rolled up our sleeves and just we came to the conclusion that it was too clever for his own good and not rewarding and too confusing, and it when you really thought about it was kind of a wacky story that not in a good way, but I mean there's other stuff I love, some of the other story arcs he did in Batman I loved. Just some I didn't like, and
well, that's the stuff that he was doing with Batman Inc. I enjoyed. I thought
I liked that too. Yes,
I thought that was really good. But I don't know. Like for me, as long as with what he does with Green Lantern, if he doesn't start, throwing in like 52 different versions of every character and whatever, I'm curious with the whole Source Wall thing that's going on with the Metal books. If that's going to be Morrison's, hey, look, there's not only 52 Earths, now there's the Dark Universe, and now there's these other 52 other universes of 52 other Earths, and it's just, just ridiculous at that point.
If he plays it straight and doesn't get too multiversity wacky, if he just plays it straight and says, I love Green Lantern, I love Hal Jordan, I want to tell some just awesome sci-fi Green Lantern-type stories, it could be amazing.
Oh, could be amazing.
If you remember, he's the one that actually, I thought one of the more interesting concepts during John's runs were the Alpha Lanterns, and that was the Grant Morrison idea he gave Jeff.
Really?
That came from Grant, yeah. Huh. He gave him that idea. So he's got kind of not straightforward, but that's, compared to what Grant Morrison usually does, the Alpha Lanterns was a cool, normal, cool sci-fi story approach, or thing. So, if that's the kind of thing he wants to do, that's awesome. We'll see. I'm excited. I'm just glad that it's not Elseworld or Premier, Prestige, All-Star, All-World nonsense. if it's just the regular Green Lantern book, that's awesome.
Yeah, and the one thing that I think that the Rebirth, Hal Jordan Green Lantern series is missing is it doesn't have all of the Lantern Corps, and I mean I think they kind of went a little crazy with it in the New 52, where
yes, they did.
I mean each of the lanterns was a different lantern in their books, and it was just kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But I mean, I love how, you know, a lot of that stuff works. And I mean, to be honest, I just miss St. Walker.
Do you really?
Yeah, I don't know why.
That's fascinating, because I don't care about that guy at all.
Really? I kind of like
it. I like the Red Lanterns because of the series, and just, maybe it was because of kind of the story plots and like how the Supergirl thing was cool.
I was going to say, that is the first time in forever that I cared at all about Supergirl in the comics.
That was cool. And
when
and,
you have Guy leading a faction of Red Lanterns against Atrocitus, and you've got Supergirl, and I like that Judge Red Lantern guy that they brought in. Who, which Zox? There was the Judge.
The pool ball one?
No, that's Zox.
Oh, that one. Yeah, right. The
But there, you know, there was that the new Lantern, and there was I just forgot his name, the other Earth Red Lantern.
I forget.
Who's, I guess, dating Bleeze or whatever in the book.
Daryl went to task on Hal. Daryl sometimes picks up on these very... I love Daryl. Daryl has these random insights that, after I think about it, I kind of kick myself for not just taking a human view of a storyline and really thinking it through. That's what Daryl's very good at. Is he really, when it first happened, where Green Lantern or Guy, you know, went to do the whole Red Lantern thing, right? He took Hal the task, because it's basically like sending him on a suicide mission, you know, if you really think about it, you know. And that's a really good point. Like, that was kind of a dick move on Hal's point. And I don't know if he really needed to do it. But, I mean, it ended up being a cool story. But, I mean, so that's cool. Red Lanterns are cool. The Yellow Lanterns are always cool. I mean, I always like the Yellow Lanterns because they always... They make for good stories, but like the other ones, I don't know. Like,
see, Larfleeze is okay if he shows up for like a one or two issue story. You know, get in, get out, and then you're like, oh, okay, that's right. I kind of dig this guy. But when they gave him a book, that was too much.
That was too much.
And I'm going to be honest, I was super excited for it when they announced that. I was like, oh my goodness, we're getting a Larfleeze series. This is going to be amazing. And then I started reading it, and I'm like, wow, it's literally the same thing in every single issue.
They never had the Star Sapphires have their own book. Not that I think they should, but
no.
It's weird because they're also, I think, they're blindingly led by love or whatever. And the Red Lanterns are blindingly led by rage. But for some reason, the rage one is just more interesting. You know,
I mean, look at the cast of characters. You're going to give me, if you put Dexstar in every single comic, I would not complain ever. I don't care. Dexstar can show up in Green Arrow and I'll be like, hell yes. I don't even care. I would read Cyborg if you put that cat in that book. But
Cyborg. Why does he have his own book? I don't understand.
Who knows?
Ever since they tried to force him down our throat as part of the Justice League.
Yeah, I've not.
He's been floundering and adrift. You know, it's like they almost tried. they tried to have him replace the Martian Manhunter role. You know, that's
the one thing I'm very happy with No Justice is that he's back, and it looks like he's in charge.
Yeah,
so I'm like, perfect. Get him there. Maybe I'll enjoy this a little bit more.
Well, just the whole. A whole generation of people think of John, you know, Martian Manhunter, and they think of Justice League Unlimited, and they just think, you know, I mean, that's what, yeah, I mean, and that's perfect for him because he can't obviously have his own book. It would take the right writer to have him have his own book.
Well,
I'll tell you what would be the coolest book ever. Did he
in the New 52? Didn't they give him a book? It was drawn by
I didn't even read it, where
it wasn't really sort of him. He was kind of pretending to be like a detective.
That's what I want. I want like a crime noir Matt Wagner drawn where he's a cop, like, you know, like because how they had him in like New Frontier, you know, how he played so prominently in New Frontier. God, that would be so cool if they did some like Elseworlds noir story of him is like a that'd be awesome. Anyway, but I'm glad he's back. I mean, he's a great supporting character, and he's
and not only that, he also, if used correctly, if you make him the focal point of a couple stories here and there, it's way more interesting to me than a lot of the other people that they try and use. You know, like, right, like with Cyborg, if you're going to give me a Justice League book with Cyborg as your focus, I don't care.
It'd be an uphill battle, that's for sure.
But putting him there, you're like, oh, okay, let's see where this goes, because he's much more interesting to me.
Yeah. I'm outside on my porch. I'm going to go inside. It's starting to get a little cold. So if you hear a sliding door. Yeah, you see, if this was prime time summer, like if this is the depth of summer, you might get some of those famous crickets. But sometimes when we would record, like during the height of summer, and I'd be like out on my back patio because it's just so nice out, maybe having a cigar while recording, you would hear like crickets in the background. And they're really loud down here in Virginia.
Oh, yeah, we don't.
What, you don't have crickets?
I mean, we do, but it's not. I mean, at least not where I live. It's not ridiculous.
These crickets sound like little miniature Cthulhu. I mean, it's like super loud.
Well, that's when my wife and I were in Japan. Apparently, it was like the craziest cicada season that they've had in years.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, that was all you heard outside. It was.
Yeah,
it was,
those are loud.
Very nuts. But
I'm inside now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but going back to the lanterns, I mean, when was the last time the Indigo Tribe was used for like anything? I can't really even. I mean, it's been a while, right?
They're just not well developed. I just don't think any writers.
But I think that's the problem. Like, they could be kind of cool, but
yeah, I don't know. I was never interested. I just felt they were filler. You know, that we need Roy G. Biv to show up. So let's. I don't know.
I mean, I guarantee that's what it was too, but I don't know. But like I said before, I miss St. Walker. I liked how they sort of ended with him. He had lost his hope, and he wasn't putting the ring back on. Mm-hmm. So he was walking around just on Mogo with the blue ring just kind of floating along behind him, waiting for him to get his hope back. And you know, now it's been a couple of years and he's gone.
Well, didn't Hal show up and talk to him recently?
Did thought, you know what? I'm a couple issues behind, so he may have shown up, and I haven't seen it yet.
I believe he showed up recently. I forget the context, but I think he did show up recently. But it wasn't that big of a thing. I think they're in a good spot with. I think Venditti did a good job of kind of bringing back the Guardians. In a way that I think there was too much melodrama there for a while with the Guardians and their ever fluctuating role of like, but now it's a little more straightforward. Now they're like, you know, they let them be in charge, but they're on a leash. It's kind of like, kind of like the equivalent of like really battle tested enlisted soldiers, and they get a brand new, lieutenant, and it's like he hasn't earned, even though he's in charge technically, he kind of recognizes that he hasn't really yet earned the right to kind of lead them yet. It's kind of like this tentative, we're the bosses again, but we understand the situation. And it's kind of, it's nice. I like
I also like how it's more streamlined, how there's only like six of them now, I guess.
Yeah, more like the old days.
Age. You have like a whole bunch, and then when they're like, "Oh, there's a whole other group of Guardians hanging out over here that you didn't know about," and you're just like, "What? How is this? I don't get what's happening anymore," you know. And then you have what's the guy, Rami, who was
I did not like Rami.
Yeah,
like the mad scientist, weird, evil, lost plant.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's streamlined. That's well put. There, it's a little more streamlined. Tied up a lot of loose ends.
Yep.
And and frankly, the metal storyline kind of with the whole source wall thing, that definitely interrupted the story flow, I think, of the book. You know, they're having the Dark Star. They have the cool not the Dominators. They had a couple of cool storylines with. Some kind of like older school kind of villain types with the Dark Stars or whatever, and they had some cool storylines going, but then when the metal thing happened, now they're kind of like janitors for a couple of issues with the sword wall, you know, and the No Justice storyline and stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. But I do like how, who's going to be the Green Lantern on Justice League? It's going to be John?
I thought it was going to be John.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
to go with Martian Manhunter, Justice League Unlimited, man, I'm telling you. That's what it's going to be.
Yeah. Well, you know, as much as I kind of get on the Green Lantern stuff for like from the New 52 because it had the four Lantern books and they were all just crossing over anyway. And I really like how Venditti has kind of put them all together and kept it, you know, much cleaner. I kind of miss having, you know, the John centric story or, you know, like I like how it's been bouncing around between them. That they're each kind of getting their spotlight in each issue. But mm-hmm. I do kind of miss, you know, I guess he was in Green Lantern Corps.
Right. I did love that book. Oh, yeah. My God. Tomasi wrote that too, right?
Yeah, I think so.
That was phenomenal. They had a Green Lantern, and then they had Green Lantern Corps, and then they have Emerald Warriors as well. And then did they have Sinestro?
There was a Sinestro book.
Which was pretty dope.
Think at one point there were like seven Green Lantern family books coming out.
And then they technically had Larfleas, and then
Red Lantern.
It was a good time. I have all those issues in my storage unit.
Yeah,
I would love if they put together some nice thick trades of that entire. If someone went back and did like some cool like chronological 500-page color trade paperback collection collected in the proper reading order from issue one of Green Lantern back 10 years ago all the way through the end of right before New 52 in the proper reading order, like all of this, that'd be amazing. Like kind of like they did with like the War Games trades, right, where it goes through 12 different books but they have it in the right, you know, they have it in the right chronological order, and it doesn't matter what book it was in. It's just like, here's the epic
here's saga, the story.
Regardless of what book it was in, and you don't leave out anything. That would be pretty dope.
Yeah, I would probably pick that up.
I would pick that up.
And you know what? Going back to it, Venditti was writing the Green Lantern book, so he's been, I guess he's gone over 50. I don't remember what issue he took over there, but I mean, he did at least like 30 of those New 52 issues.
It did. Yeah, New 52 is going to, New 52 is weird. I don't know how well it's going to be received. There's going to be a lot of retrospectives, you know, in 5 years on its place.
The way I look at it, the Superman stuff was pretty much terrible. The Batman stuff, for the most part, was pretty good. I liked the Green Lantern stuff. Flash was hit or miss. And then, like, everything else that they kind of did, I liked some of the books that they were putting out that were, I mean, I don't want to say experimental, but
Frankenstein, Agent of Shade was dope.
Yeah, like, that was pretty cool. And you had
Shazam, I liked.
What was the other one?
When Jeff did the Shazam book, that was cool. No, I liked it.
Central. I just forgot. Kind of the horror one with Spectre.
I know what you're talking about. I didn't actually like that too much, to be honest.
I'm not like a huge horror-ish, like magic comic fan, but that one, I don't know what it is. That one hit really well for me. I enjoyed it a lot.
All right. Well, I mean, Batman and Robin was a great title. Tomasi, I thought that was really good.
Yeah.
Detective was pretty, I mean, the thing is I think, I've always started saying this and people think I'm crazy, but if you actually just look, like I'm looking right now at the spine of all of the Batman and Detective hardcovers, and obviously Batman, the Court of Owls, City of Owls stuff was fantastic.
Oh my God, I love those.
It was really good. Really, really good. But then you look at the next one, Death of the Family, which I thought ended very disappointingly. You know, then it's got two trades of Zero Year, which I thought dragged on forever and was not that interesting. You know, and then it's got the...
Did that really go on that long?
2 years, I don't remember. 12 issues that dragged. Then they have Graveyard Shift, I forget what that was. Then they have Endgame. Then they had the Bunny Ear Gordon thing, which...
You know what?
I liked it.
I don't know, really? I liked it. Yeah. Gotham by... That was the book.
Gotham by Gaslight?
No, Midnight. Gotham by Midnight.
Oh, okay. Then they had Bloom, which I thought was awful. And then they had the Endgame thing where he fought with the Joker and they blew up or died or whatever. I just, looking back at it...
I guess it did start a lot stronger.
All I'm going to take away from that entire 50-issue run was, man, the Court of Owls thing was awesome. But none of those other storylines I feel any compunction to read again. Actually, some of the best stuff, I thought some of the best stuff was the last 10 issues of Detective, when I think Tomasi took over, and they had like a couple of really cool storylines involving Gordon, like when Gordon went over to Iraq or wherever to like
I really enjoyed after Damian died the Batman and Robin book where each issue, you know, where each book was, you know, Batman and Two-Face, Batman and Aquaman, Batman and whatever. It was his quest, you know, to bring Damian back.
Yeah.
I loved it.
It felt like Brave and the Bold a little bit, you know, with the rotating guest star. I mean, but the first Batman Eternal was great.
I love Batman Eternal. I read it, but it wasn't as good.
You know what's funny? One of my son's favorite trades to read is Forever Evil. He really likes that.
You know, I really enjoyed it at first, and then that fell into the delay loop, and then they spoiled the end before the end happened in another comic. And I was like, well, okay. Maybe they announced that Grayson was going to be a comic before they did what they did with Dick.
It was something like that.
And I was just like, well, okay. You delayed this book 3 months and now you told me what's going to happen in it. But for me, I say it all the time. Give me Crime Syndicate. I will read it. I don't care.
That's true.
Anything with them.
I'm looking at the Flash now. It did end with Venditti and Van Jensen.
Van Jensen, that's right. That was who was writing it, Williamson.
It's very useful when you just sit in your chair and look at your big wall and think, oh, look at that. I can tell you exactly what. But I think it's going to be remembered for the reimaginings being largely huge misses. Like the reimaginings of the Birds of Prey, the reimaginings of Teen Titans or Titans or. Those just, I don't know why, but I think those are going to be viewed as just, big misses. So I think the way I'm going to remember it, you know, 5-10 years after it's done, is that I'm going to look at it almost like Marvel's Heroes Reborn, almost.
Mm.
Kind of like not really part of the main DC continuity, you know, but just kind of like an interesting, you know, Heroes Reborn type experiment where for a short period of time they just kind of tweaked everything, but some of the stuff just doesn't mesh, period, you know, and that's fine. But because I just think of like, you know, how they renumbered Detective to keep going, like assuming those Detective issues like were actually part of the run. But if you think of it that way, those Detective issues, man, they don't fit in at all with the issues that came before 152 and the issues that came after. You know, so yeah, they're numbered that, but man, they did not take place in the same world, and that's fine. But just that's why it's a lot easier for me to mentally put the Batman New 52, because now the new Batman starts at number one. It's easier to kind of compartmentalize them as different. But yeah, the whole numbering thing, it's like it's strange to me, especially with like Action, right?
Right. Remember,
the Action Comics was a hot mess. Oh my god.
Oh, in New 52?
Yeah, in New 52.
Oh, yeah. There was one arc of Action Comics I enjoyed, and it was with the weird, like, underground people.
That was actually cool.
I used to refer to it as Lana Lang Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
Because, like, all of a sudden, she's basically Lara Croft, and I'm like, what is happening here? But that arc was good.
That was pretty good.
And everything else, it was kind of a hot mess.
Yeah, we're in a much better position now. I mean, I think.
Well, that's
Better than we could have hoped for, you know. And it's because, you know, books like Deathstroke and stuff like that, you know, or Red Hood that could have just fizzled out, not gotten good writers on them, and just kind of But they've been strong and they've stayed strong.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's also, you know, like, and again, it's the books like Deathstroke and Red Hood that I think from New 52, you know, like the Midnighter series, and things like that were really the standouts of that era.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now you have like more of the main titles are on a much better place than the New 52 stuff, you know, so it kind of, it helps it all. I don't know. It kind of helps it all like really stand out as a whole. Whereas like you were saying, New 52, you're like, oh, you know what? I really like the Court of Owls stuff. And I kind of like this book for a bit and that, but overall, I mean, what do you really remember from the New 52?
Yeah, I remember the first Justice League arc, that was a huge deal, you know, Jim Lee and everything.
Right.
I remember the Court of Owls. I remember the Batman Eternal weekly book. I remember Forever Evil being pretty cool. And I remember Frank. Yeah. It's a small thing, but I remember the Frankenstein book being awesome. And yeah, I remember Shazam book by Jeff Johns, which I really liked.
So over 5 years of comics, there six things that you liked.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah.
So there you go.
And what now, does that say? And now with Rebirth, you know, people's mileage may vary, but I think generally speaking, what's made it such a success is I think people generally are loving the Superman book. People are liking Batman. People are liking Detective. People are liking The Flash. People are liking, you know, books that they weren't expecting. Hal Jordan's been super strong. And the Red Hood book is a welcome surprise. Deathstroke's a welcome surprise, you know. Yeah. And so that's...
Yeah, I mean,
the
Batgirl,
Pillar.
The Batgirl
and Birds of Prey I really enjoy.
Yeah.
The Pillars are... They're strong. You know, it's the only glaring weak spot. And... Was it tough? Oops.
What happened? Hello?
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 Sorry, my little AirPods died out on me. I don't know, I'm much longer on these things. But I was saying, the Pillars are all strong, and Wonder Woman's frankly the only one that's kind of been, for me... New 52 Wonder Woman, that you have to say. New 52 Wonder Woman was very good.
The first couple years of it.
Yeah, right.
Were before Azzarello and Chang left.
Yeah, right. But so the Pillars are strong, and there's lots of, you know, really cool little mini, you know, smaller series that have done very well.
I think to that point, when you have, you know, the big, you know, the big tentpole series, you know, doing as well as they are, you can have those weird random other books that people be like, oh, well, let's check this and that and this. And it overall, it helps bring everything up, you know, but with New 52, if people aren't into, you know, any of the big stuff, they're much less likely to be like, oh, okay, you know what? I'm going to go check out, you know, this Green Arrow book, or I'm going to check out whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, cause like, I mean, New 52 Green Arrow was a mess except for when Lemire was doing it and it was terrible. And then it was great. And then it was terrible again.
And also, it doesn't help that they a very siloed approach. Like Snyder and Capullo clearly did not want their book to, you know, it was like, this is my Batman book, you know, and that's that, you know.
Right.
Whereas now Tom's book, even, you know, it's though it's written not in a traditional DC way, I still feel like it's 100% in with these other books. You know Absolutely. What I mean? Like when he had the date night issues with Clark and stuff, mm-hmm. that felt like the Superman in the Superman books.
Right. You know? And that's the same thing with Trinity when you had, you know, that first arc when they're all out at the farm having dinner with Batman's there, Wonder Woman's there. They were the characters. Like everybody, you know, it wasn't like, oh, you know, I'm going to write these guys like I want to write them. It was like, oh, okay, let's see what they're doing now in all of their stuff. And I'm going to write it in that way so everything kind of feels uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's what makes everything, I think right now, makes everything way better.
Well, yeah, what you want to avoid is the loyal DC readers losing, like, at some point, if you don't have a strong cast of books across the board, I think what a lot of DC readers tend to do in downtimes is they just kind of retreat into their shell and get the books that they like. Like, okay, you know, a lot of these books aren't hitting with me. I'm just going to retreat back and read my Batman and my Detective and just kind of put my nose down and just read those. But when everything's hitting and doing well, that's when you can get those guys to come out of their shell and try books that maybe they wouldn't have tried in the past. You know, because not everyone can be Mike Myers and read every DC book, you know.
I tried for a bit, but I couldn't keep it up. Yeah, like when Rebirth started, I'm like, I will read everything.
I can't read Harley Quinn.
Oh yeah, that one I never.
I can't read Harley Quinn. I can't read and I can't read the magic books. Like I read some of the New Age of Heroes books, and some of them are fun. You know, like the Terrifics, and I like the new Challengers. I'm only one issue in, and Sideways is kind of fun. But there's other ones that like I read half of the issue. I'm like, I just can't. Like the ones that are more magic, like the Brimstone and the Immortal Men one, and some of the other ones. I can't. Yeah, I'm not even
Immortal Men. I think is my least favorite of them all.
It was so generic and boring. It was awful. But the challenge was the unknown one. I thought was an interesting approach.
Yeah.
It's a little dark view. It's like, okay, like they did it kind of out of altruism. Like, okay, we had nothing left to lose, you know, back in the old days. Because I'm a big Challengers fan, the old Silver Age stuff. That was just altruism, you know, heroicism. Like, let's use this to help. You know, this one, it's like, well, you might as well help because you're dead anyway. Oh, and if you leave, you're just dead. So, like, we're forcing you to be heroic. You know, it's a kind of a very modern kind of approach on it that it could backfire on DC because I think I don't know. We'll see. I'm excited for the ride. We'll see how many issues they get.
Yeah, I mean I liked this is all kind of separate. I don't expect any of these titles. I mean, honestly, when they were announced, I wouldn't expect more than 6 to 10 issues. But I mean, a few of them are hitting there. But I don't know. I mean, I think a couple of them, you know. Five is out, six is coming out soon, and I can see them going on for a bit, you know, for a bit longer. I mean, then there's a couple of them where I'm like, you know what, if this gets a full arc out, you know, I would be surprised.
I just love seeing,
I don't think they'd pull it that way.
I love seeing Metamorpho and Plastic Man.
Yeah,
I've never been a fan of Mr. Terrific. I think he's boring. But I love Metamorpho and Plastic Man. That's awesome.
Right.
You know, it's just, hey, you know what? It's like a batting average, you know? You get 3 hits out of 10, you're doing great. If they get 3 characters that kind of sort of stick around and add to their IP pool, that's a success, you know? And I can tell you right now, it ain't going to be the Immortal Man, and it ain't going to be the Brimstone guy, but maybe it'll be the Sideways guy, I don't know. But the Sideways guy feels a lot like the throwaway crappy characters they introduced in the new 52 Teen Titans run. Like, it's an uphill battle.
Like Bunker?
Like, yeah, like, you just... everything's got to go the right way for these characters, these young characters to kind of stick. They got to be written really well. They got to be really well-received, well-designed. And it's just... it's an uphill battle. It's for them to catch with any number of people.
Yeah.
All right, was anything else you wanted to talk about?
Or? No. I mean, do you have anything else you wanted to hit on when you're here?
No, I'm good, man.
Okay. Ronnie had to sneak out to get his daughter. That's why he's been silent.
He's been a good boy. He agrees with everything I said.
I don't know about that.
I don't think so at all.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, anyway, I would like to thank everyone for listening to this week's episode. If you want to get in touch with me on Twitter directly, you can at Aaron S. Bell. You can tweet to Ronnie and tell him that you disagree with everything he said in this episode at RonBar316. Chris?
Chris Campbell 8. Or just listen to By Gotham, Gotham by Geeks podcast. That's where I show up most of the time.
Most of the time. Do you have any other podcasts you wanna? That's
about it. I have too many kids, man. The fact that I can even record that weekly with Daryl and Russ is I'm surprised I've been able to stick with it for we're gonna record our 100th episode very soon, and we're going to talk about every single Batman family comic that's ever reached issue 100. We're going to talk about issue 100 of that
interesting
story. So That but not as real concept. Number 100, because I draw a line somewhere.
Well, I'm going to tell Daryl he needs to bring that up every time you start talking.
Azrael 100, too long, didn't read, but move on.
If you want to, you can get in touch with the show directly on Twitter at @DC_absolute. And thank you all for listening.
Bye-bye.
DC Absolute.
Hell yeah.
No, that wasn't terrible.
That was pathetic. Boo.
Nerdy Legion.
NerdyLegion.com. Totally confused. Shut up. I hate you. Forget it. Podcast over. Shut up. You're not my real dad.